Hello and welcome to the reading of the Waterloo Cedar Falls The Courier for Tuesday, February 16th on Iris. I'm your reader, Erin. Our first article on the front page, Social Workers Ride with Cops, Partnership Meant to Address Mental Health Needs Locally by Jeff Ryan's Waterloo. Social workers will ride with Waterloo police officers under a new partnership to address local mental health needs, officials announced Monday. Elevate Certified Community Behavioral Health Clinic social workers will accompany patrol officers to respond as a team to residents who are experiencing a crisis. Elevate also provides mental health crisis intervention training for officers. Quote, the goal of this program is to decriminalize behavioral crises and reduce stigmas by having crisis specialists available 24/7, both within the police department and through Elevate and other service providers, end quote, said Waterloo Police Chief Joel Fitzgerald. Quote, our cooperative and collaborative approach proactively addresses underlying issues that often result in law enforcement intervention, incarceration, or the application of force, end quote. Captain Joe Liebold said the arrangement will free up officers for other calls. Quote, officers can get tied up hours at a time acting as a counselor on the street, and Elevate frees us up from that. They can take over and talk them through the crisis or get them the services they need, end quote, Liebold said. Elevate has been assisting Waterloo Police since January 1 on calls that involve a crisis response or services to those with mental health disorders. On Monday, the two agencies finalized an agreement to expand and improve crisis services in the community by embedding social workers with the police. Embedding social workers takes this partnership a step further, said Elevate Program Director Bob Lincoln. Quote, the Elevate mission to expand availability of evidence-based behavioral health treatment for people of all ages is consistent with the WPD mission tenet of sanctity of life, he said. This partnership will help make sure mental health needs are addressed in a timely and more effective manner, end quote. Elevate currently has three social workers assigned to the program, and the plan is to put them on different shifts, Leopold said. He said that the department will monitor to see when there are traditionally high volumes of mental health related calls and assign the social workers to times when they are needed most. Quote, law enforcement is confronted with mental health crises on a daily basis with few good options available to address the situation, said Mayor Quentin Hart. This partnership is an excellent example of innovative problem solving for mutually beneficial outcomes for our residents, end quote. Elevate, a new clinic in downtown Waterloo, uses a quote, no walls, end quote, approach to provide behavioral health in Black Hawk County. The agency offers an array of services such as trauma-informed care therapy, cognitive behavioral therapy, veteran support, psychiatric evaluation, and medication management, medication-assisted treatment, and other substance use disorder treatments. The agency, as well as the Ride Along social workers, are funded through a $4 million CARES Act grant, Lincoln said. Elevate counselors and mobile crisis team are dispatched through the state's Your Life Iowa line at 855-581-8111 or by text at 855-895-8398. For an appointment, call 833-370-0719 or walk in at 604 Lafayette Street, second floor of the Fowler Building. Business hours are 8 a.m. to 7 p.m. Monday through Thursday and 8 a.m. to 5 p.m. Fridays. Weekend appointments are available as needed. Our next front page article, Council okays $4 million for body cameras. Revenue from new traffic cams will fund equipment purchase by Sydney Sizon Waterloo. A $4.1 million deal for police body cameras and other equipment passed on a 5-2 vote Monday by Waterloo City Council. The 10-year agreement with the company Axon will cover new body cameras, tasers, in-car cameras, evidence management systems, virtual reality training, auto transcription and redaction assistance services for video. The Waterloo Police Department plans to fund the agreement with part of expected revenue from added traffic cameras, Police Chief Joel Fitzgerald previously said. Axon is charging the city $224,000 for the first year, nearly $408,000 the second, and nearly $431,000 in subsequent years. Quote, this is talking about the way that we are doing policing, end quote, Mayor Quentin Hart said Monday. quote, there is incredible accountability that goes along with this system, end quote. The police department will transition from its current body camera vendor, Safefleet. Axon equipment was characterized as more reliable than Safefleet products. Major Joe Liebold said the department last purchased body cameras around 2015, making them outdated. Axon software automatically triggers cameras to turn on when officers exit their cars, take a weapon from their holsters, or arrive at an active scene, preventing officers from forgetting it to turn on cameras. Blackhawk County NAACP President Latanya Graves said the Axon cameras will document police encounters from beginning to end. Quote, if these new cameras will help eliminate the possibility of human error, then I feel it's a good thing, end quote, Graves said Monday. Jamad, known as Jamie Salas, a faith and community leader, said the cameras could lessen the city's financial burden from police misconduct lawsuits. He praised Axon technology that allows auto transcription to save officers time on writing reports. Another Axon feature notifies supervisors and allows them to watch live if officers take their guns or tasers out of their holsters. Salas said this would allow supervisors to better enforce a department policy. Waterloo resident Brent Richmond said Axon's virtual reality training could help officers learn to treat residents with more dignity and respect. The VR training focuses on topics like empathy, how to cope with traumatic encounters, and ways to respond to situations that could involve weapons, Fitzgerald said at a February 1 work session. Waterloo City Council members Margaret Klein and Patrick Morrissey voted against the proposal Monday. Morrissey and Klein wanted to postpone the agreement until they got more information about how the agreement could impact the city budget. Klein criticized Fitzgerald for bringing forward the Axon proposal while applying for other jobs in Miami and Albuquerque. Quote, I'm just going to say it. I would like it to come from a chief who has long-range plans for being in the city, Klein said. I think you have to have skin in the game when you propose a $4 million program, and that's my opinion, end quote. Hart said the equipment would benefit all of the department's staff beyond the chief. Council member Jerome Amos Jr. said he would not condemn Fitzgerald for looking to further himself in life. Quote, that police chief position is a job. That's what it is. It's a job, Amos said. And if someone is looking to improve their lot in life, I don't have a problem with them doing that, end quote. Councilmember Dave Boson said he was concerned about the city's ability to pay for the, quote, very expensive, end quote, Axon program. He said revenue from added traffic lights could be affected if the legislator bans the cameras or taxes them. Boson noted that nearby Cedar Falls and the Blackhawk County Sheriff's Department use WatchGuard by Motorola for video services. WatchGuard services would cost an estimated $3.2 million. Liebold said the city would still need to purchase its tasers from Axon if it chose another company for other equipment. City Attorney Martin Peterson said he worked with Axon to give the city an option to end the agreement early if needed. The contract allows Waterloo to withdraw if the department does not receive sufficient funding. The city can end the contract without any cause after 5 years, Peterson said. Fitzgerald was inaudible or unable to connect for most of Monday's virtual meeting, which was held on video platform Zoom. Our next front page article, utilities urge conversation. Some states facing outages, blackouts after winter storm, Courier staff and the Associated Press. As temperatures locally failed to climb above zero Monday, Cedar Falls Utilities and MidAmerican Energy joined utilities from across the Midwest to ask customers to conserve natural gas until at least Friday. At least one Iowa utility, Corn Belt Power Cooperative, based in Humboldt, was warning customers to prepare for intermittent power outages lasting 45 minutes. Record-setting cold across the United States has increased demand for natural gas used to heat homes and businesses. In addition, natural gas wells are freezing in the Southwest and limiting supply. Quote, this is an unprecedented weather event impacting natural gas utility customers throughout the Midwest, end quote, said Steve Bernard, CFU General Manager, in a news release. Energy companies in Missouri also began implementing rolling power outages Monday in response to overwhelming demand for power. A sprawling blast of winter weather across the U.S. plunged Texas into an unusually snowy emergency Monday that knocked out power for more than 2 million people. As nightfall threatened to plummet temperatures again into single digits, officials warned that homes still without power would likely not have heat until at least Tuesday, as frustration mounted and the state's electric grid came under growing demand and criticism. The storm was part of a massive system that brought snow, sleet, and freezing rain to the southern plains and was spreading across the Ohio Valley and to the northeast. The Southwest Power Pool, a group of utilities across 14 states, called for rolling outages because the supply of reserve energy had been exhausted. Much of western Iowa is serviced by the Southwest Power Pool. In the Cedar Valley, natural gas customers are asked to take as many of these steps as possible. Turn your thermostat down at least 5 degrees from your normal setting. Replace dirty furnace filters. Avoid running gas fireplaces and other appliances such as garage or bonus space heaters. Check window latches, secure all doors, and turn off ventilation fans after use. Look for other opportunities within your home to lessen the use of natural gas during this short period. Quote, we are asking our community to work together to minimize the impact of this extreme weather event. Every conservation effort by our customers reduces the cost to the community, end quote, Bernard said. The high in Waterloo on Monday was -2 degrees, which was a record cold high, said Mark Schnackenberg, chief meteorologist at KWWL-TV. The previous record of -1 was set in 1936. Temperatures were forecast to fall as low as -20 degrees overnight, with a high Tuesday of 2 degrees. Things will gradually warm up as the week progresses, with a high of 12 on Wednesday and temperatures in the 20s by the weekend. And our last front page article, Cedar Falls Human Rights Task Force Widens Scope, by Amy Rivers, Cedar Falls. The city council agreed to broaden the scope of a new task force trying to solve issues brought to light in an annual 24/7 Wall Street report that continues to show the Waterloo-Cedar Falls metro areas as one of the worst places to be Black in America. The task force created by the City Council on February 1 was discussed at a joint work session Monday evening between the Council and the Cedar Falls Human Rights Commission. Quote, when I heard about the task force, it was something that excited me, the bigger picture conversation, end quote, said HRC Chair Willie Barney. Quote, with the report that came out and the ancillary conversations, there's a great opportunity to begin addressing that, end quote. The metro area, which has a 7.3% Black population, debuted on the 24/7 Wall Street report at number one in 2018, causing concern among community leaders and discussions about possible remedies in the areas of unemployment, income, and home ownership. Waterloo-Cedar Falls dropped to number three in 2019 and to number five in 2020. St. Cloud, Minnesota was the worst place to be Black last year, but the disparities remain pronounced. Black residents make about half of the median income of white residents, have a 16% unemployment rate compared with 3.4% for whites, and while 72% of white residents own a home, only 34% of Black residents do. Quote, we must show our history of this town, end quote, said at-large Councilwoman Kelly Dunn. Quote, why does our city look totally different than the city right next door to us? And we need to recognize that there's reasons for that, end quote. Commission member Melissa Heston wanted to make sure the council was, quote, on board, end quote, with what the task force made up of to be named council members, HRC members, and the community at large, might ask of the council when its reports are eventually issued months from now. Quote, to do this well means people may get uncomfortable, and your constituents may get uncomfortable, Heston said. We have to be very clear that race is a very difficult issue in this country to talk about, and there could be repercussions, end quote. Instead of the task force providing direction to just the Human Rights Commission, the council and the commission members agreed it should also be able to provide a direction to the city at large, including the municipal government as well as schools and the university. Quote, there's been a lot of transition and turmoil, end quote, within the HRC in recent months, new commission member Dave Kibbett said. Quote, in order to do that work, it would help greatly if the city would be very intentional. We recognize racism is a problem in our community, and we want to address that openly. That gives license to the Human Rights Commission, end quote. Barney agreed to choose two HRC members to serve on the task force at the commission's meeting Monday, and Mayor Rob Green will choose two council members. Those members will then choose between 8 and 10 others to serve alongside them to craft a final report by this fall. Quote, I want to make sure the public recognizes this is a good faith effort to try to do the right thing, end quote, said Ward 5 Councilman Frank Dara, saying he would be in favor of more task forces after this one wraps up its work. Quote, obviously, the Human Rights Commission has a set of responsibilities, but I think the community should have ongoing conversations around these issues, end quote. Moving to the Cedar Valley section, state won't withhold vaccine. Officials reverse plan to deny counties that lag on inoculations by the Associated Press and Rob Hillisand, Mason City Globe Gazette, Des Moines. Iowa health officials have reversed a decision to withhold COVID-19 vaccines from some counties that were reported as not having used up to 80% of their allocation last week. The Iowa Department of Public Health informed five counties Friday that it would withhold this week's allotment of vaccine. The decision drew criticism from several county health administrators who said either that the state was mistaken or that bad weather had temporarily slowed their progress. The announcement followed a new state rule requiring the use of at least 80% of counties' vaccination allotment. The rule is designed to reduce the amount of vaccine sitting in storage. As of Monday, three of the counties, Buchanan, Washington, and Chickasaw, reported that state officials had informed them they would be getting their allotment of vaccines this week, the Des Moines Register reported. Ty Burkhart, director of the Buchanan County Health Department, said her county actually had used at least 80% of its allotment last week, but that because one of its vaccination clinics was held Friday, state officials who had used Thursday figures throughout the county thought the county was behind. Iowa's current focus in its vaccination effort is on seniors, teachers, and childcare workers, police, and firefighters. By midday Monday, state officials reported that 355,703 people had received at least one dose. Two doses are needed for full protection. New state data showed another 206 confirmed cases of the coronavirus. The Iowa Department of Public Health reported one more death caused by the virus. The state regularly reports deaths on a delay, taking days and weeks to add deaths publicly after a verification process. To date, there have been 5,237 deaths reported in Iowa. Our next article, Career Academy wins $1 million grant. Waterloo, one of three winners announced Monday by the state by Career Staff Waterloo. Waterloo Community Schools was one of three $1 million competitive grant winners announced Monday through the state's Career Academy Incentive Fund. The grants from the Iowa Department of Education are intended to prepare more high school students for success in college, post-secondary training, and the workforce. Eastern Iowa and Indian Hills Community Colleges were also awarded grants to increase access to career academy programs in high-demand fields through new and expanded regional centers. Students benefit from industry partnerships, earn high school and college credit, and gain technical and traditional academic skills offered through career and technical education programs. According to a news release from the state, the incentive fund aligns with the Future Ready Iowa goal of 70% of the workforce having education or training beyond high school by 2025. This is the second round of awards. Governor Kim Reynolds commended the grant winners. Quote, expanding career academics develops our workforce talent pipeline and prepares high school students for high skill and demand careers right here in Iowa, end quote, she said in the news release. Quote, it's about our students being able to find something they're passionate about while also earning valuable industry experience and college credit, end quote. Waterloo's funds will be used to expand its career center, which serves seven surrounding school districts and three non-public schools. At facilities benefiting from all three grants, students will have access to career and technical education at programs in high-demand fields, including healthcare, advanced manufacturing, welding, engineering, technology, and agricultural sciences. Ann Lebo, Iowa Department of Education Director, in the press release called the grants, quote, a great step toward ensuring all students have the opportunities career academies offer, she added. Through these partnerships, students often earn industry credentials and certificates that they can take directly into the workforce and be highly marketable or have a solid foundation to succeed in further post-secondary education, end quote. The fund was established by a 2019 law that extends a 1% sales tax for school infrastructure through January 2051. At least $1 million will be awarded annually in grants to support career academy partnerships. More information is available on the Iowa Department of Education's website, educateiowa.gov, by searching Career Academy Incentive Fund. Our next article, CF Park and Rec Eyes Partnerships Rec Manager wants businesses to help city create programs by Amy Rivers, Cedar Falls. The city's Recreation and Programs Manager wants to inform partnerships with businesses to help create programs for residents, introducing new classes and events while cutting the city's cost. J.J. Lillibridge made the suggestion at last week's Parks and Recreation Commission meeting, noting such collaborations are an, quote, up-and-coming, end quote, trend among municipal recreation departments nationwide. Quote, it takes a lot of time to put together an entire program, sports, cooking, whatever, Lillibridge said. Bringing in these small businesses that are experts in their area of expertise is very beneficial to us, end quote. One example Lillibridge brought up was a, quote, behind-the-scenes detective program, end quote, started by a Parks and Recreation Department in New Jersey that has spread to 14 states. Participants can solve a fictitious crime while cooped up in their houses in the winter. Another was a virtual youth cooking class that is, quote, very popular in Texas, end quote. Quote, number one, what local organizations can we work with? Then, what unique and different opportunities do we not have in Cedar Falls, or Waterloo for that matter, and bring to the Cedar Valley, end quote, Lillibridge asked. Lillibridge noted his idea is just a draft. He will gather feedback, and if commissioners agree, we'll bring it to the city council for sign-off in the coming months as part of the city's visioning process. Quote, I think it's a great way to expand collaboration with the community, end quote, said Commissioner Claire Struck, who said she was interested in how the funding and revenues would be split. Lillibridge said it would demand on the size of the program and on agreements with participating businesses. Quote, in my experience, a lot of businesses come to us because of the reach we have from a marketing standpoint, end quote, he said, noting the city can use its platforms to push registration, for example. Commissioner Alan Stelnegger asked if any local businesses or organizations had reached out about partnerships. Lillibridge said he had reached out to places like Kinder Music and the Cedar Valley Soccer Association, who had shown interest. Commissioner Sarah Quirky asked if Lillibridge could also be, quote, intentional, end quote, about making sure those with disabilities could be included. Lillibridge noted he wanted it to do, quote, do a little bit better job of that, end quote. Quote, ultimately, right now, we just want to figure out what our community needs, end quote, Lillibridge said. Our next article, Treatment Plant Back on Evansdale Agenda by Kristen Guess Evansdale. The long-awaited decision on how the city will move forward its failing water wastewater treatment plant will again be debated by council members at 6 p.m. Tuesday at Evansdale City Hall. Recent discussions have veered toward the possibility of connecting it to Waterloo's wastewater plant under the direction of Mayor Dick DeWater, but the council wants more answers about the arrangement. City Council members will set a date for an on-site virtual tour of Waterloo's plant at Tuesday's meeting. Council members also will participate in a workshop on the proposed budget for the fiscal year ending in June 30th, 2022. They plan to set March 2nd as the max levy public hearing date. In other business, the council will appoint Gene Walker as mayor pro tem. Hear an update on the Eagles Landing development from Chris Fischels, who was hired to help with commercial development in the TIF district. Request to hire Bolton and Menk for a sump pump project at the Community Response Center for $10,900. Our next article, Man Refuses to Leave Store Arrested by Kristen Guess, Waterloo. A man was arrested Saturday evening for refusing to leave a Kuick Star convenience store. Dennis Scott, 44, of Waterloo, was charged with criminal trespassing, possession of drug paraphernalia, harassment of a public official, all simple misdemeanors, and possession of ammunition by a convicted felon, a felony. Scott was reportedly entering employee-only areas at the Kuick Star at 1214 Franklin Street around 6:15 p.m. Saturday. Waterloo police officers on the scene say he refused to leave or give any identification. Reports state Scott was, quote, speaking erratically and talking to people that were not there, end quote. Scott admitted to the officers that he had taken a lighter and returned the lighter to the staff, claiming he lived in the store, according to police records. Scott was eventually taken into custody for refusing to leave the store. While searching Scott, officers found a needle containing an unknown substance in a single .22 bullet in his pocket. He was transported to the Black Hawk County Jail, where he was identified after the fingerprinting process, and officers found another .22 bullet in his mouth. Scott is barred from possessing ammunition or firearms. He was convicted of third-degree sexual abuse in Dubuque in 1998, assault with intent to commit sexual abuse with a minor female between the ages of 14 and 17 in Dubuque in 2000, and placed on the sex offender registry. He pleaded guilty to first-degree robbery and theft in 2002, possession of a controlled substance in 2011, domestic abuse impeding air blood flow causing bodily injury in 2014, and second offense domestic abuse and violation of a no-contact order in 2016 in Black Hawk County. Our next article, man arrested for holding revolver to woman's head, by Jeff Rines, Waterloo. A Waterloo man has been arrested after he allegedly held a revolver to a woman's head and threatened to kill her early Monday. Police said Travinsky Tyreek Swington, 28, pulled out the gun during an argument in a vehicle parked in the driveway of 1848 Patton Avenue around 3:10 a.m. Monday. Others knocked the weapon out of the way, and Swington allegedly struck a woman in the scuffle that followed, according to court records. He then walked off and fired around about half a block away. When officers arrived, they found a .38 caliber Smith & Wesson revolver behind a nearby garage, and Swington was arrested for felon in possession of a firearm, intimidation with a weapon, assault with intent to inflict serious injury, assault causing bodily injury, and carrying weapons. Authorities said Swington is prohibited from possessing firearms because of a felony conviction in a robbery outside the former Byron supermarket in October 2014. Court records show Swington is currently awaiting trial for allegedly assaulting the same woman in October. Metro Briefs virtual festival this weekend, Cedar Falls. The Patti Pace Performance Festival will present, quote, Meeting the Movement, end quote, in an inaugural virtual festival via Zoom Friday and Saturday all day. The festival serves as a supplement to those that have taken place face-to-face for decades. It is focused on the intersection of performance, identity, and social justice to move toward an equitable and anti-racist future. Attendance is free and open to the public. If you have any questions on how to sign up, please email pppfvirtual@gmail.com. County GOP picks officers Thursday, Waterloo. Republicans of Black Hawk County will hold its regular monthly meeting at 7 p.m. Thursday. The agenda will include the election of new officers for the next two-year term. The meeting will take place at Upper Iowa on 3563 University Avenue. All Republicans are welcome to attend. Lutheran Services promotes to Des Moines. Lutheran Services in Iowa recently announced two promotions within its statewide mental and behavioral health programming. Jim Gutherman has been promoted to Director of Clinical Services, and Amy Davis has been promoted to Statewide Manager of Clinical Services. Gutherman and Davis will oversee all community-based brain, mental health, and therapy services, as well as LSI behavioral health intervention services and community programs. Gutherman has been with LSI since 2003. Davis has been with LSI for 18 years. Mercy One updates robotic surgeries, Waterloo. Mercy One surgical teams in Northeast Iowa, have upgraded to the latest robotic technology with the Da Vinci Xi surgical system. The Da Vinci system translates your surgeon's hand movements in real time, bending and rotating instruments while performing the procedure. With the upgrade, surgeons at Mercy One Waterloo Medical Center have access to state-of-the-art technology not found in most hospitals in Iowa. Quote, we're only the second hospital in Iowa to have the newest generation of vessel sealing offered by the Da Vinci system, said Dr. Scott Hines. This means we're able to perform our procedures with less bleeding and reduce pain for the patient during recovery, end quote. Moving to the obituaries, Joyce Marie Darragh Crack, I'm sorry if I'm pronouncing that wrong, I'll spell it, it's Darrah-Kirouac, March 2nd, 1945, Evansdale. Joyce Marie Darragh Crack, age 75, of Evansdale, Iowa, passed away at the Unity Point Hospital in Waterloo, Iowa, surrounded by her loving family. Joyce was born on March 2nd, 1945, in Salt Lake City, Utah, the daughter of late Harold and Lucille Mentis Goldsmith. She was preceded in death by a great-granddaughter and a stepson, Mark Kurak. Joyce was married to the love of her life, Roland Roger Kurak. She is survived by her children, Terry Jansen of Macomb, Michigan, Lori's spouse, Terry Owens of Waterloo, Iowa, Tracy Jansen of Waterloo, Iowa, and Chris McBride of Waterloo, Iowa, and a stepdaughter, Donna Kurak of Jackson, Maine, her grandchildren, Jonathan Bryles, Aaron Jansen, Ashley Smith, Tara Jensen, Alicia Jensen, Brittany McBride, and Brianna McBride, her great-grandchildren, Candace Holmes, Farrah Hudley, Brooklyn Jansen, Aaliyah Jansen, Eleanor Holmes, Sora Brills, Malaya McBride Edgar, and Samara Brills. She has two siblings, David Goldsmith of Spring Hill, Florida, and Mary Kirschman of Waterloo, Iowa, as well as many nieces and nephews. Before her retirement, Joyce had worked at the Waterloo school system as a teacher's associate for many years and was employed by the Waterloo Walmart. Joyce was an active member of the Waterloo Seventh-day Adventist Church. Joyce was a wonderful and beautiful woman who will not only be missed by her family, but with everyone she came in contact with. Memorial contributions may be made in her name to the Seventh-day Adventist Church. Hugh S. Fossum, November 20th, 1946 to February 7th, 2021. Hugh S. Fossum, 74, of Goffstown, New Hampshire, passed away February 7th in the comfort of his home after a long, courageous battle with multiple myeloma. He was born at November 20th, 1946 in Cedar Falls, Iowa, to Julia Spickler and Ernst Fossum. He graduated from Iowa State Teachers College High School in 1965 and later from the University of Northern Iowa. Hugh began a teaching career in Vinton, Iowa soon after. In Vinton, Hugh met his wife Carol on Halloween 1971 and thereafter began multiple years of mischief and mayhem, culminating in love and a 46-year marriage. After moving to New Hampshire, he continued his career in education for a short time and later was director of information services for Wigan and Nowry Law Firm until his retirement. Throughout his life, Hugh was an active runner, lifelong Chicago White Sox fan, gardener, sports coach, antique car enthusiast, pizza maker, and IPA connoisseur. Hugh learned to cheer on the UNH Wildcat hockey team via Section 116 Row Q at the Wit. He had a hearty laugh and deeply loved life. He was a gentle soul characterized by the values of his Midwest origin. With his daughters growing up in and attending the schools in Goffstown, Hugh watched multiple concerts, plays, and sports events. Hugh adored his family as well as his growing grandsons. He loved their antics and backyard games as much as those in the sandlots. During retirement years, Hugh and Carol's travels took them to Iowa, California, New Mexico, and Arizona, not mention relaxing summer vacations in coastal Maine. They were fortunate to share leisure beach times with the Jerskies, the Peas, Pods, Sprouts, and Shoots. Hugh is survived by his wife Carol, daughter Kristen Fossum, and grandson Nicholas Howell of Goffstown, his daughter Caitlin Fossum Johnston, son-in-law Daryl Johnston, and grandson Zachary Johnston of Manchester. His extended family includes his sister Barbara of Denver, his West Coast family Diane, Corey, Trish, Ethan, and Jenny Fossum in California, Kelly Bonelli in Minnesota, and numerous relatives in Illinois, Bill and Donna Simmons of Bethlehem, New Hampshire, and Barbara Simmons of Newbury, New Hampshire. He was preceded in death by his parents and brother, Randy. The family would like to extend their sincerest gratitude to the staff of NH Oncology and the Visiting Nurse Association of Concord for their compassionate and professional guidance. In lieu of flowers, the family requests donations offered to the Payson Center or the Concord Regional Visiting Nurse Association. They wish to acknowledge the culinary team, friends, and neighbors for kind deeds, words of sympathy, and encouragement. A celebration of Hugh's life will occur at a later date when we are free to safely hug, laugh, and dance together. For more information or to sign an online guestbook, please visit www.frenchandrising.com. Elvira Elizabeth Hogan, April 17th, 1928 to February 12th, 2021, Strawberry Point. It is with great sadness that the family of Elvira Elizabeth Hogan, 92 of Cedar Rapids, Iowa, formerly of Arlington, Iowa, announced her passing on Friday, February 12th, 2021 at the Cottage Grove Place Gardens in Cedar Rapids, Iowa. Elvira was born in Wukama, Iowa to Carl and Frances Reeks Kunin on April 17th, 1928. Elvira attended Sacred Heart High School in Olwen and post-graduation worked at Raytheon in Olwen. On October 24, 1950, Elvira was united in marriage to William, known as Bill Hogan, at the Sacred Heart Church in Olwen, and the couple celebrated their 68th wedding anniversary in October 2018. In 1952, Elvira and Bill began farming near Fairbank. In 1956, they moved to Arlington, where they ran a successful farming and livestock operation for 45 years. Elvira worked alongside Bill every day on the farm, morning and evening chores, doing field work, baling hay, sorting hogs, and all other farm duties. Elvira took pride in her beautiful flower and vegetable garden and was always happy to share her produce. Elvira loved to play games, whether it be playing softball in her early years, did badminton in the yard with the grandkids, or countless games of 500, euchre, and aggravation. She was a fierce competitor no matter the game. Elvira also loved to play bingo and visit casinos to play slots and always seemed to come out ahead. Elvira also enjoyed sewing, making her wonderful bread, and spending time with her family and friends. Elvira will be fondly remembered for her commitment to her family, generosity, competitive spirit, and willingness to help others. Elvira delivered Meals on Wheels in Strawberry Point for 10 years. She was a longtime member of the St. Mary Catholic Church in Strawberry Point and served on the OLCC at St. Mary. Elvira will be sadly missed by her two daughters, Patty, spouse Dan Burak of Arlington, and Janet, spouse Darwin Benning of Cedar Rapids, two sons, Ron, spouse Melody Hogan of Strawberry Point, and Scott, spouse Shelley Hogan of Weston, Wisconsin, two sisters, Alice Rohde of Olwen and Agnes Vargason of Oklahoma City, Oklahoma, one brother, Urban, spouse Florain Kunin of Olwen, one sister-in-law, Margie Kunin of Olwen, eight grandchildren, three step-grandchildren, nine great-grandchildren, 19 step-great-grandchildren, one great-great-grandchild, four step-great-great-grandchildren, and many nieces and nephews. Elvira was preceded in death by her husband, William Hogan, parents Carl and Frances Kunin, four brothers, Adolf, spouse Alice Kunin, Reen, spouse Joan Kunin, Herbert, spouse Helinda Kunin, and Luke Kunin, one sister, Katie, spouse Laverne Vargason, and two brothers-in-law, Joe Rote and Marion Vargason. The Hogan family would like to extend our gratitude to all the staff at the Cottage Grove Place Gardens in Cedar Rapids and the Encompass Hospice Unit for their compassionate and loving care. Memorials may be made in Elvira's name to the food pantry at St. Mary Catholic Church in Strawberry Point, Iowa. Condolences may be sent to Janet Benning, 403 Crimson Drive, New Northeast, Apartment 25, Cedar Rapids, Iowa, 52402. Online condolences may be sent to www.mullerfh@iowa-telecom.net. A private family service will be held on February 27th, 2021, with Reverend John Hugan officiating. Final resting place, Cass Township Cemetery, Strawberry Point, Iowa. Ronald Randy Kundinson, October 10, 1947 to February 12, 2021. Ronald Randy Kundinson, 73 of Omaha, Nebraska, passed away Friday, February 12, 2021 at Life Care Center of Omaha in Omaha, Nebraska, following a lengthy illness. Ron was born in La Crosse, Wisconsin, on October 10, 1947, the son of Ronald G. and Ethel Kunson. Ron moved with his family to Denver, Iowa at age 5 and graduated from Denver Community Schools in 1965. He attended La Crosse State University and enlisted in the U.S. Navy and served primarily in the Philippines from 1966 to 1969. Upon discharge, Ron attended Ellsworth College and UNI. Ron was originally employed by Northwestern Bell in Waterloo with the majority of his career in Omaha, Nebraska, where he retired from U.S. West. Although Ron did not have children of his own, he was a loving and caring uncle to his niece and nephew and their children. He enjoyed traveling and cherished time with his friends. Ron was a frequent contributor to several youth services in the Omaha area, supporting children in the needs of the community. Ron was preceded in death by his parents, Ron and Ethel. He is survived by his brother, John, spouse Pat Cunson of Denver, his nephew Kyle, spouse Corey Cunson of Forest Lake, Minnesota, his niece Jamie, spouse Tim Smith of Overland Park, Kansas, and his great nieces and nephews, Mijah and Finn Cutson and Isaiah, Ava, and Trejan Smith. Private family services will be held at a later date with burial in Fairview Cemetery in Denver. The family suggests any memorials may be made to Youth Emergency Services or Open Door Mission, Omaha, Nebraska, or to the Acker Matthias American Legion Post number 653 in Denver, Iowa. Online condolences may be left at www.kaisercorson.com. Kaiser Corson Funeral Home in Denver is in charge of arrangements. 319-984-5379. Thomas Albert Lawler. Thomas Albert Lawler, age 74, of Waverly, Iowa, died Saturday, February 13th, 2021, at his home of natural causes. A family funeral mass will be at St. Ambrose University Christ the King Chapel, with burial in Calvary Cemetery, both in Davenport, Iowa. Due to COVID, there will be no visitation. In lieu of flowers, memorials may be directed to Mayo Clinic, La Brie Center, Waverly, Iowa, Cedar Valley Arbitorium, or the Iowa Barn Foundation. Redmond Funeral and Cremation Service in Parkersburg is in charge of arrangements. Online condolences may be left at www.redman-schwartz.com. Nadine R. Miller, Dunkerton. Nadine R. Miller died Friday, February 12th at Mercy One Medical Center, Waterloo. Visitation will be Thursday, February 18th, 2021 from 5 to 7 p.m. at Parrot and Wood Chapel of Memories, ending in a prayer service. Parrot and Wood Chapel of Memories is in charge of arrangements. 319-232-3235. Memorials may be directed to the family. Condolences can be left at www.parrotandwood.com. For anyone attending the visitation, will be required to wear a mask and social distance. Edward W. Rode, R-O-E-D, May 30th, 1941 to February 11th, 2021. Edward W. Rode, 79, of Waukon, Iowa, formerly of Washburn, Iowa, died Thursday, February 11th, 2021 at Thornton Manor in Lansing, Iowa. Private family memorial services will be held at Huge Lutheran Church in rural Decorah, Iowa, with Pastor Nancy Solomson officiating. Burial will be at Huge Cemetery at a later date. Cars may be sent to Ann Road at 1026 Highway 9, Waukon, Iowa, 52172. Martin Grew Funeral Home in Waukon is handling their arrangements. Edward Walter Road was born May 30, 1941 in Decorah, Iowa, the son of Edwin and Edna Sharp Road. He was baptized and confirmed at Huge Lutheran Church in rural Decorah and graduated from Decorah High School in 1959. In 1962, he married Linda Sensor at the Little Brown Church in Nashua, Iowa. They had two children, Brenda and Brian. Linda died in 1985. Ed worked as a secretary guard at John Deere in Waterloo, Iowa, retiring in 1998. On April 24, 1987, he married Ann Reagan at Immaculate Conception Catholic Church in Gilbertville, Iowa. They moved to rural Waukon, Iowa in 1998. Ed was a member of Huge Lutheran Church, where he served as a past president on the church council and served on the cemetery board. He was very active in the Isaac Walton League in Washburn, Iowa. Ed liked being outdoors and enjoyed hunting and fishing, especially trips to Canada, Michigan, and New York with his friends. He also enjoyed cooking, especially hog roast, and gardening. Survivors include his wife, Ann Rode of Waukon, his children, Brenda, spouse Todd Fisher of Waterloo, Iowa, and Brian, spouse Wendy Rode of Cedar Falls, Iowa, two grandchildren, Zachary and Kristen Rode, a sister, Elaine, spouse Jerry Thompson of Decorah, his mother-in-law Kay Reagan of Decorah, four sisters-in-law, Marilyn Sensor of Decorah, Chris Hovden of Cresco, Iowa, Peggy Reagan of Decorah, and Lori spouse Craig Zadra of Rice Lake, Wisconsin, and two brothers-in-law, John and Jim Reagan, both of Waukon. He is preceded in death by his parents, his first wife, Linda Sensor, Linda's parents, Galen and Ethel Sensor, father-in-law, John Reagan Sr., two brothers-in-law, Charles Sensor and Dennis Hovden, and a nephew, Jacob Reagan. Online condolences may be left at www.martinfunerals.com. Moving to the sports page, UNI basketball, Green is set for second operation, Jim Nelson, Cedar Falls, a little more than 7 weeks after having surgery on his left hip. Northern Iowa star guard AJ Green is scheduled to have surgery on his right hip Tuesday with the same specialist in Colorado. UNI head coach Ben Jacobson confirmed the news Monday during his weekly media availability. Quote, the rehab on the left hip went very well, end quote, Jacobson said. Quote, when he went out for a follow-up, the doctor told them he felt great about how it was coming along, end quote. Jacobson said AJ and his family told him Tuesday's surgery is similar, but not exactly the same as the one performed on his left hip. The 6'4" Green, who is the reigning Larry Bird Missouri Valley Conference Player of the Year, initially felt pain in UNI's game with the St. Mary's on November 26th in the Panthers' season-opening crossover classic at the Pentagon in Sioux Falls, South Dakota. Green scored 24 points in 37 minutes the following day against Utah State, but the pain continued to bother the junior. Upon returning from Sioux Falls, Green underwent an MRI and was evaluated in both Cedar Falls and Iowa City by specialists before having the procedure performed on the hip the week of December 14th in Colorado. Green was seen recently at UNI games walking without crutches. Jacobson said the anticipated recovery for Green is 6 months. Quote, the family told me the doctor feels great with how everything looks, and he was very confident that of full recovery, Jacobson said. We are looking at mid-August, give or take, for live action, end quote. Our next article, State Dual Championships. Championship season arrives. Wrestlers, coaches are grateful to still be competing, by Jim Nelson, Des Moines. Champions will be crowned Wednesday night inside Wells Fargo Arena in Des Moines. Waverly Shell Rock Wrestling head coach Eric Whitcomb never doubted it would happen. The 2021 State Dual Championships will begin at 9 a.m. Wednesday with Whitcomb's Waverly Shell Rock squad, the top seed in Class 3A, as the Gohawks for their fifth State Dual Championship, but first since 2010. Despite the COVID-19 pandemic continuing to hold its grip on the United States and Iowa, testing prep athletics programs in the Iowa High School Athletic Association and Iowa's Girls Athletic Union at every turn, both organizations have found ways to host championship events, and the IHSAA has taken every precaution to make sure the state dual championships and traditional state championships, two of the state of Iowa's most cherished events, will happen. Social distancing requirements and COVID-19 relations safety procedures will limit spectators, create reserved seating blocks, and limit capacity to 4,000 fans per session. The tournament annually draws 75,000 over the four-day event. Quote, I've been answering that question for months and months, and my response is, why wouldn't we? Whitcomb said. Obviously, everyone has had different experiences with it, COVID, but one thing people might forget about is in wrestling, we deal with a lot of different things that other sports maybe don't have to on a regular basis. Skin stuff, and we are so close because it is an intimate sport. You are in close proximity and it is physical, so we deal with a lot of different things. Obviously, we have never been in a situation of dealing with a pandemic, but sickness and skin stuff, having to deal with one more thing, this is just kind of a par for the course. Our guys have done a great job of it, end quote. From isolating among just wrestlers to skipping out on normal teenage high school events, coaches and athletes alike said the sacrifice and the extra precautions and protocols are all worth it. Quote, it means a lot, end quote, said Waverly Shell Rock senior Luke Walker. Quote, we all have taken nothing for granted and we are so grateful to just have the opportunity to wrestle. That is what everybody should feel, grateful. All the red tape we had to go through, yeah, it was a little annoying, but it didn't affect us. It was what we had to do to be able to wrestle and we'd all do it again, end quote. Longtime Independence head coach Michael Doyle, whose Mustangs earned their third consecutive berth in the 2A field, everything for the most part has gone smoothly. Quote, the high school season really has been fairly normal other than the crowds being smaller, Doyle said. We got matches in, a lot of big tournaments were canceled, but so we had a lot more dual meets. A lot of our kids got 40 plus matches in. That was a good part, end quote. There were some unexpected side benefits to following COVID protocols too, end according to Doyle. Quote, in school, our kids tried to stay apart. Socially, they weren't going out with their buddies, Doyle said. It kind of forced our team to get closer. The only thing they had was each other. There was a little more unity. So maybe in a way that has helped our team a bit, end quote. The action of the mat Wednesday should be fast and furious and strongly contested. Two teams, Southeast Polk and 3A and West Delaware of Manchester and 2A, will be seeking three-peats. Only four other programs in state dual history have won three or more titles in a row. West Des Moines Dowling, 1987-92, Don Bosco, 2005-2010, Waverly Shell Rock, 2008-2010, and Davenport Assumption, 2011-2014. Don Bosco in 1A, West Delaware in 2A, and Waverly Shell Rock in 3A are the top seeds. In 1A, either the Dons or second-seeded Lisbon have been in the finals in each of the last 5 years. The two programs have combined for 14 titles, 10 by Don Bosco. Last year, the Lions took home the crown with a thrilling 36-30 win in the final. The two were scheduled to face on January 26, but the meet was snowed out. It is expected Bosco and Lisbon will see each other in the championship match Wednesday. Quote, I think a lot of people are looking ahead to that, wrestling fans, but we are going to keep our guys focused on MFL Marmac. We only wanted to play one hand at a time, and quote Don Bosco coach Tom Hogan said. A 14-2 Don Bosco has been well tested. The Don's two losses this year are by 1 point to Southeast Polk and by 3 to West Delaware. West Delaware won their third state dual title in program history a year ago, and the Hawks are big favorites this weekend. However, it will be no cakewalk as either 9-time dual champion Davenport Assumption or Independence will be waiting in semifinals and on the other side, second-seeded Crestwood of Cresco and third-seeded OCH have strong balanced squads. In 3A, the top two combatants and last year's state finalists have already faced off once January 9th, Waverly Shell Rock edged out Southeast Polk 36-28 in Dubuque as part of a triangular at Dubuque Hempstead. Independence Doyle summoned up most what every wrestler or wrestling coach wants to convey. Quote, people here in our community are excited, Doyle said. The kids have worked really hard to get to this point, this reward. Now we get to wrestle for a few more days, end quote. State dual pairings, Wells Fargo Arena, Des Moines, February 17th, Class 1A, 11 a.m., Don Bosco versus MFL Marmac, 11 a.m., Lake Mills versus Woodbury Central, 11 a.m., Lisbon versus West Hancock, and 11 a.m., Logan Magnolia versus West Sioux. Class 2A, 9 a.m., West Delaware versus Sergeant Bluff Lufton, 9 a.m., Davenport Assumption versus Independence, 9 a.m., Crestwood versus Creston, 9 a.m., Osage versus Winterset. Class 3A, these are also all at 9 a.m., Waverly Shell Rock versus Lynn Mar, Fort Dodge versus North Scott, Southeast Polk versus Norwalk, and Waukee versus Bettendorf. Call the Courier. Question. KWWL News reported yesterday that the state has over 500,000 vaccine doses available, so why aren't they getting them out to people? Answer. The vaccines are being given to people, but not as quickly as many people would like to see. More than 540,000 doses were delivered to Iowa, according to the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention. Almost 369,000 doses were administered in Iowa, the same data shows. Iowa Governor Kim Reynolds said the state is working with some counties that are lagging in giving COVID-19 vaccines, but she did not identify them. The Blackhawk County Health Department said it is giving vaccines as quickly as possible. Local health officials are monitoring vaccine administration by local healthcare systems and other providers. The Blackhawk County Health Department has a COVID-19 vaccination website that gives updates on its vaccine doses. Question, I live in the Waterloo area, right outside of town. Snowmobiles are driving across people's yards, sidewalks, etc. They don't clean up their mess. Who can I contact about this issue? Answer, this may depend on whether the town you technically live in has an ordinance addressing snowmobile use. You can contact Waterloo Code Enforcement at 319-291-3820 to share your concerns. The Waterloo Ordinance outlines specific locations that people can drive snowmobiles within the city's corporate limits. limits, but it does not address cleanup requirements after snowmobile use. Question, I was at the Cedar Falls Hy-Vee on February 8th. The Hot Meal Deli had a sign stating certain hours they are closed. Is there a headquarters number we can call to ask they reopen 1 to 4 p.m.? Question mark. Answer, you can try calling the Hy-Vee Customer Care Center at 800-772-4098. Question, in the Sunday, February 7th paper, you had an article about a gentleman who repaired shoes. Do we have anyone in our area that does this work? Answer, the nearest shops we could find that provide shoe repair are Arnold's Shoe and Boot Repair at 3260 Southgate Place Southwest, Suite 14 in Cedar Rapids, and Tyndall Shoes, 24 South Frederick Avenue, Olwen. We received no answer at a few other listings we tried to contact. If any readers know of the cobblers in the area, drop us a line. Question, in Cedar Falls, is it illegal to have campaign signs up months after an election? Answer, no. According to city spokesperson Amanda Huseman, quote, political signs fall under the First Amendment. Per several court cases, the city is not able to limit their duration of display on property, private property. Signs in the right of way are not permitted, end quote. Question, in your February 10th newspaper, it shows Sheriff Tony Thompson in solidarity with protesters and not a single one had a mask on. Why is that? You would think the sheriff would set a better example. Answer, it would have been safer if everyone at the June 3rd protest had been wearing masks, but there was no mask mandate in the city until late August. Digest, Biden questioned about wage hike, Washington. Union activist Terrence Wise recalls being laughed at when he began pushing for a national $15 per hour minimum wage almost a decade ago. Almost a year into the pandemic, the idea isn't so funny. The coronavirus renewed focus on challenges facing hourly employees who continued working in grocery stores, gas stations, and other in-person locations, even as much of the workforce has shifted to virtual environments. President Joe Biden responded by including a provision in the massive pandemic relief bill that would more than double the minimum wage from the current $7.25 to $15 per hour. But the effort is facing an unexpected roadblock. Biden himself, the president, has seemingly undermined the push to raise the minimum wage by acknowledging its dim prospects in Congress, where it faces political opposition and procedural hurdles. Briefly, rocket attack. Rockets struck outside Erbil International Airport near where U.S. forces are based in northern Iraq late Monday, killing one U.S.-led coalition contractor and wounding at least 8 people, Iraqi security and coalition officials reported. No one immediately claimed responsibility. Ebola. Guinea officially declared it has an Ebola epidemic this week after at least 3 people died and 4 others were infected in the West African nation. Neighboring Sierra Leone and Liberia put their citizens on high alert. Trade Organization Nigerian economist Ngozi Okonjo-Iweala was appointed Monday to head the World Trade Organization, becoming the first woman and first African to take on the role. Clinic donation. Basketball legend Michael Jordan is donating $10 million to launch 2 medical clinics in underserved communities near his hometown in North Carolina, a regional healthcare system announced Monday. The Novant Health Clinics are set to open in early 2022 in New Hanover County along North Carolina's southeastern coast. Protest. Scores of people demonstrated in the Indian cities of Bengaluru and Mumbai on Monday after climate activist Disha Ravi, 22, was arrested over the weekend for circulating a document on social media supporting months of massive protests by farmers. And that does it for today's reading of the Waterloo Cedar Falls, The Courier, for Tuesday, February 16th on Iris. I'm your reader, Erin. You can access today's reading online at iowaradioreading.org. Thank you so much for listening. I hope you have a wonderful day.